Now, please be seated. Okay. You know, Father Scott, when you made your comment in praise time about peace and so forth, it dawned on me that we only had the one instrument. Wasn't it beautiful? Wasn't it beautiful? Just to have, and that set the tone for that peace. And it was just beautiful. And one of the lines in one of the songs says, "Love has called my name." Keep that in mind, because that's going to be part of what I'm going to talk about a little bit tonight. I have some notes. I noticed that Father Scott had notes last week. He hardly went to them at all. Did you notice that? I'm going to carry mine, because I've had a lot longer time to forget what I've had than Father Scott. So, no, I really have just reminders of different times and so forth. Like Father Scott, I was born in New Jersey, a little town called Glen Rock, New Jersey, which literally is only about 8 miles from where he first lived his first 4 years of his life. I was shocked when I heard that. It really was. Does anybody know what Paramus, New Jersey is famous for? Exactly. It is famous for shopping malls. When shopping malls first came into existence, that was about the first place that they built malls. And they built, at the intersection of Route 4 and Route 17, they built four humongous shopping malls. People came from all over the place to go to the shopping malls in Paramus. And then they started to pop up in different places. But that was the place that had more malls. People came out of New York City to go to Paramus to shop, because they could go in one place and get all those stores that they could get in New York, too. But so I was born in Glen Rock. I want to just tell you a little bit about the town. It was a town 17 miles due west of the George Washington Bridge. You could draw a straight line due west, 17 miles. It was a bedroom community for New York City. I would say 90% of the men in the homes there commuted to New York every day to go to work. It was middle class, upper middle class. There were no apartments, all single family homes. There was just, I think, two buildings that actually were split, you know, between two families. That was it. It was a fantastic town to grow up in. It really was. And even to this day, the educational system there was top of the world. If you graduated from Glen Rock High School, you were in the college you wanted to go to. That's the truth. And I graduated in the second graduating class. Today, people fight to buy a home in Glen Rock, New Jersey, because the school system is still that good. And I'm not even going to begin to tell you what the price of homes are today. It is unbelievable. Very quickly, when Drew and I bought our first house here in Jacksonville in 1970, our mortgage, taxes, and insurance payment per month was less than what my mother was paying just in property taxes every month. That'll give you an idea. That's how they paid for the school system. Great town to grow up in. Now let's talk about, there was about half a dozen, 12 families in the town that didn't quite fit the mold, you know. One of them was ours, was our family. And that was because I hardly remember my dad not drinking. Hardly remember it. When I was a little guy, 4 or 5 years old, he had a job selling textiles and rope and stuff like that. He would travel. He had was given a company car, a Packard, if anybody knows what that is. And he had that job, and then he got transferred into the city to work in the office. And through a series of events, which my mom told me about later on in life, he was let go. He was put in a situation where somebody said he did something, the boss was over in Europe, and so he was fired. He had never done anything like what they told him. From that point on, he never really was able to hold a steady job. I remember he had one night job working in a place where they built pumps, and that didn't last too long. So that was the way we grew up. How did we get money? I often wondered that until I looked in the mail one day, held an envelope up to the light, and saw a check from his older brother. It was in the mail. His older brother was an executive at DuPont. He was way up in the DuPont Corporation in Wilmington, Delaware. He would send money. His mom and dad, my grandmother and grandfather, would buy us groceries every Saturday, and so forth. So that's how it went. I went to work when I was 11 years old, going to school, delivering morning newspapers, and then when I'd get finished with the route, I'd go to the train station. There were two train stations in town. That's the way everybody went to New York, whether that or a bus. And I'd sell newspapers until it was time to go to school. So that was just the way things had to be done. You know, if I wanted extra clothes that I didn't get at Christmas or something like that, I had to earn the money. And I would get on a train and go to Paterson, New Jersey, which was a lot cheaper to buy things, and I'd pick up my clothes there and come back on the train. I graduated from high school when I was 17 years old, and in about 4 months after graduation, joined the Navy. My older brother had joined the Navy. I joined the Navy because I wanted to get out of the situation. And so I went to boot camp, then went to A school down in Key West, then got put on a destroyer, which eventually ended up in Mayport, and that's how I got to Jacksonville, on a destroyer. In 1962, by the way, kids, in case I was born in 1942, in the middle of World War II, In 1962, the ship I was on ended up going to the Cuban Missile Crisis. We were on the blockade. The only reason I mention that is because towards the end of the blockade, about 2 weeks before it ended, we had a situation occur on ship where we had to get somebody into San Juan because he was deathly ill. They didn't have anybody to send out, so we had to go in. On our way in, and I won't go through all the details because it'd take too long, we actually ended up getting grounded on a reef. We were lifted off of the water, literally, and placed on a reef. And we thought we were going over. We did a 57-degree roll while we were on the reef, and that's impossible. You don't ever come back up. But we came back up. We got into San Juan, and the man was taken care of, and it tore up the bottom of the ship. And so we were done in terms of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, why do I say this? Because we ended up coming back to Jacksonville, and in those days, there was a shipyard in downtown Jacksonville. And instead of taking us somewhere else, the tug pulled us down the St. John's River for 4 hours, and we went into the dry dock in downtown Jacksonville. And so we were there for 3 months or something like that. And during that time, at the insistence of the guys I worked with, because they were going, and I kept telling them, no, I don't want to do that, they said, come on with us, come on with us. And what they wanted me to do was go to a young adult group at a church that was only a few blocks away from the shipyard. And by the way, now that I mention church, that really wasn't a part of my life. It really wasn't when we were growing up. We were a C and E-er. We went a little bit, but it wasn't very much. And honestly, it didn't mean anything to me. It really didn't mean anything. If you'd have said, who is Jesus to me at that time, I would have given you an answer something like, I think he's the Son of God. That's what I've heard. And that was it. That's all I knew. So we went to this youth group, or young adult group, and walked into this large room, and across the room was some lady sitting in the back over there. That was where I met Drew. She went to First United Methodist Church, and she was in that young adult group. And we had quite a meeting. We literally exchanged barbs. It was that, you know, she tried to give me a line and I gave it right back to her. She gave it back to me. I gave it back to her. So that was how it went right in the beginning. But there was some sort of an attraction there in that. I got out of the Navy in 1963. By that time, we were dating. And I got out of the Navy in 1963. I went home in the springtime, and I had done something in the Navy that really inspired me. I said, I'd like to be a teacher. I really felt like I enjoyed that. I used to take people around the ship and show them, tell them all about everything. I said, man, that's fun. I like that. So I said, I'm going to go back home and see if I can get into college and go be a teacher. So I went home in the spring of 63, and through my old guidance counselor at high school, he arranged an interview with the director of admissions at Montclair State College, which was a teacher's college at that. You know it? Yeah! I was at a conference in Daytona Beach a couple of months ago and met another person that graduated from Montclair State. Anyhow, I interviewed with this guy for about an hour, and he said, you really serious about coming here? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, you're in. I said, is that all you want to do? He said, yeah, that's it. And he said, look, I've talked to you for an hour. I understand, you know, you're older than most of the people that we're going to get in here in the freshman class. You know what you want to do. I can tell by talking to you, you've matured. You're going to be okay. So I don't mind giving you just, I never took an SAT or anything like that. If you knew I graduated from Glen Rock High School, that was a big key, because he knew I got a good basic education. So in the fall, I got out of the Navy, and I started at Montclair State. In the spring of 1964, I had an accident playing. Oh, I forgot to tell you something. I'm sorry. When I was born 2 months premature, and it was World War II, and the hospital had a mix-up. My mom couldn't feed me, and they forgot to feed me. Seriously. And I was like, was it 3.5 pounds, did mom say? That I was born at 3.5 pounds. I went down to below 3 pounds. And then my mom said, something's wrong. So she started questioning everybody, and then they found out they had never fed me. And so I've had people say this to me. Understand how I'm coming here. I've had people saying to me that Satan tried to take me out right from the beginning. You know, if you want to look at it from that standpoint. The end of my freshman year in college, 2 weeks before I was supposed to take finals, I had an accident playing softball at college. Again, I won't go into the details, but I ended up in a coma for 3 days. I lost my right kidney. They had surgery and all kinds of stuff. Again, I should have died. I lost 5 pints of blood internally. And you only have about 9 or so. And so I lost more than half of my blood internally. But I made it. And what was pretty neat about that is that I couldn't do anything that summer. My freshman year of college, I had 3 part-time jobs to make myself, you know, get money, put gas in a car. I couldn't work that summer because I was sliced all up. And so I said to the doctor, I said to one of the surgeons, I said, can I drive? He said, yeah, you can drive. I said, can I drive 1,000 miles? He looked at me and he said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to go to Jacksonville and spend the summer. Can I do that? He looked at me and he said, all right, but you got to promise me something. You won't drive very long and then you rest. You drive and you rest. And he let me go. So I spent that summer with Drew's mom and dad. And that was a really good time. And yeah. I was in nursing school. Yeah. You had a distinct advantage last week.
Yes, I did.
Your wife wasn't here. So, we got married in between my sophomore and junior year in Jacksonville, and Drew came on up to Jersey. We got ourselves a little apartment, that was fairly close to college. She got a job working as a nurse in a hospital up there, and I graduated from Montclair State in 1967. At the end of my practice teaching experience, in my senior year, I had such a terrible practice teaching experience that I said, "If this is what it's about, forget it. I'm not doing this." So when we came, we took a 7-week vacation and drove up into Canada and stuff like that, and ended up in Jacksonville. And she said to me, "If you want to stay up here, I'm cool." But I said, "No, I don't want to stay up in the New York metropolitan area." So we moved to Jacksonville. Instead of going into teaching, I got a job with a international multi-line property and casualty insurance company as an underwriter trainee. I worked for them for 6 years. But then in 1973, I heard about an opportunity to buy a franchise bookstore. And as happened, I bought the bookstore. And it was over in Roosevelt Mall when it was Roosevelt Mall and before Orange Park Mall. It was very successful for the first 3 years. And then Orange Park Mall opened up, and things just didn't go the same way anymore. In 1978, Christmas Eve, 1978, Drew had, from time to time, and I will give her credit, she never bugged me. She never bugged me. But every once in a while, she'd say, "You know, we probably need to go to church." And I'd find up all kinds of excuses not to do that, including faking sleep on Sunday morning. I'm just being honest with you. That's the way it was. But on Christmas Eve, 1978, I came home and I said, "You know, we had Mary and Kathy at that time. They were 6 and 8, or something like that." And I said, "Well, why don't we go up to that little church you've been calling?" She had called this church called St. David's Episcopal Church on Fort Caroline Road. And I had gone to an Episcopal church up in New Jersey when I went. And so I said, "Why don't we go there for Christmas Eve?" And here was my excuse. Seriously, this is what I said. We probably need to expose the girls to it, and then they can make up their own mind. What are you laughing at? That's what I said. I had to come up with something, as you know. So that was what I said. That evening, we went to, I think it was a 6 o'clock service. It was the service designed for the kids, and we walked in. It was just a little chapel. It wasn't the building they have now, and we sat in the back row on the left. And when it came time for the sermon, the priest, you guys know who I'm talking about. The priest said, "All the kids, come on up here." So he brought all the kids up to the altar area. And he said, "I'm going to read you a story." And he read a story called Barrington Bunny. And I'd never heard this story before. And I'll give you my synopsis of the story. Here's what it was. Drew will tell you there's a lot more to the story. This is all I heard. Barrington Bunny was a big furry bunny, and this field mouse, one bitterly cold winter night, needed protection. So Barrington said to the field mice, "Come on under me, get under me, I've got all this fur, I'll keep you warm." So the mouse came under, woke up the next morning, crawled out from underneath Barrington and said, "Barrington, Barrington." Barrington didn't respond. I still get this one. Barrington had frozen to death. And the priest stood there and said, to the kids, this is what Jesus Christ has done for you. He died so that you might live. That's the first time I heard the gospel. Never heard that before. And I was sitting in the back row trying to hide my face because there was tears just flowing down. And I didn't know what I was crying about, but there were just tears coming down my face. Well, we started to go there semi-regularly, and I found out something that all these people I thought would probably be hypocrites weren't. They were really nice people. So we started to go more often. That was in 78. In 79, in the spring, this couple came up to us, Jerry and Dale Link, and they said to Drew and I, "We got a deal for you." I'm going, "Oh, really? This is it. We got a deal for you. In 2 weeks, they're having a marriage encounter weekend. We'll watch your kids for the whole weekend if you go." Well, they had this big, long spiel laid out that they could tell us how good this was, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. We looked at each other and said, "Okay, we'll go." Not knowing anything about it. We didn't have any idea what the weekend was about. Marriage encounter weekend is designed to take a good marriage, a basically good marriage, and make it better. Learn how to communicate better and so forth and so on. So we went on that weekend. It's not evangelical. It is not designed to bring anybody to the Lord. It's designed to enrich your marriage. And God showed up. And all I know is this. On Friday night, I came as one person. On Sunday night, I left as an entirely different person. And I mean that. The people from St. David's gathered at the closing of this weekend, and they took us out to Jerry and Dale's house that night, on a Sunday night, and they had a party for us. And I just kept running around telling everybody, "I found God! I found God!" Like he was lost, you know? But that was it. I found God. And I can just tell you this, and I mean this with all my heart. As far as I was concerned, I had found life. I found out what it's all about. And I couldn't explain it, but I knew I had it. I knew I had what every person would really want. I had it. I found it. And I never looked the other way. But I still didn't understand exactly what had happened. So 3 weeks later, I'm in the bookstore, and a man comes up to the desk. I was behind the desk. He comes up to the desk, and he says, "I know you don't have this book, but would you order a book for me?" I said, "Sure, I'd be glad to." And he gave me the book and the author and all that. And we filled out a 3x5 card. And I said, "Well, I need your name and phone number." So he said, "Well, here." And he reached in his back pocket, and he pulled out a business card, and he handed me the business card. So I stapled it to the 3x5 card. I said, I'll call you when we get it, you know. I looked at the card. Well, he was an Episcopal priest. And I'd never seen him before. We'd seen people, you know, around. But I had never seen this guy before. And up in the right-hand corner of the business card was 1 John 4, 7 through 12. I went, head to the back of the store, got a Bible, and looked it up. In verse 8, there were three words that just nailed me. God is love. When I read those three words, then I knew what had happened. Those people on that weekend showed us God's love. They just showered us with God's love. And it changed me. It literally changed me. And it changed our life. You know, I didn't know going into that weekend, my wife wasn't real content with our marriage at that point, because what was I doing? I was pursuing the American dream. I was going to make all the money I could make, I was. That's why I bought the business. I was going to, you know, retire at 40 and all that stuff. God is love. That's where the lyrics came out from that song. I wrote them down. Love has called my name. Mm-hmm. Love called my name that weekend. And from that point on, it was gangbusters. I mean that. I went all the way. In November of 1979, I mean, I got involved with everything. In November of 79, the church called Dale Howard to be the priest. And a lot of you know Dale Howard. And he started preaching the gospel. Christianity 101. That's what I call it. He started to show us what it really was to be a Christian. You know what was happening? Some of them were running out the front door, but the others were coming in the back door, and the church just started to grow and grow and grow because the word was being preached. I want to say, and I'm going to get a little mixed up on my time here. If I confuse times, please understand what I'm saying. It was later on, just a little later on, the next year, 1980, they had some sort of thing, and I ended up being the diocesan representative of St. David's. What that meant is I had to go to a meeting every month. But one weekend, one Saturday, Dale said, I want to go with you. So the two of us rode out to the beach for the meeting. And in the meeting, there was this big debate about something. I have no idea what it was. But it was a big debate. And they couldn't figure out what to do. They knew they had to send a letter to do something and so forth. And with my experience with the insurance company, I used to dictate letters, 20 or 30 letters a day. And I knew how to do that. So they were fussing and mussing, and people were doing all kinds. I raised my hand. They didn't know who I was. I think this was the second meeting. So I raised my hand, and I said, well, it's really pretty simple. This is what you really need to do. And I wasn't bragging. It was there for me. I knew what was supposed to be done. And I said, here's what you need to put into the letter. So I kind of dictated a letter to them. They all sat there and looked at me like, yeah, I think you're right. Now, why am I telling you that? Because on the way home, Dale looked at me and he said, I want you to be my next senior warden. I'm a new guy in the church. I didn't know what senior warden meant, much less being a senior warden. And it turned out that fall we had elected new people, and I ended up being the senior warden. He appointed me a senior warden. Learned a lot doing that. Drew and I became very, very active in Marriage Encounter. We eventually became area coordinators for Marriage Encounter. And during that time, we used to have a Saturday morning men's prayer gathering. Remember, Bob? Robert? It was Bob in those days, okay? And I remember one Saturday morning, there was only two people that showed up. Me and this guy right here. I am so glad you came tonight. I was hoping you would. So he started talking to me. If you've never figured it out, he knows how to talk. And he started talking to me. And he started introducing me to a concept called the baptism of the Holy Spirit. And he said, you need to get a book. Now, I can't remember. Was it 9 o'clock in the morning you told me about? 9 o'clock in the morning, because I read another book later on by, I wrote these down, Terry Fulham, Miracle, and Darien, which was a similar story. 9 o'clock in the morning. And he said, you can probably get it down. There was an old Christian bookstore down on Arlington Road. He said, you can probably get it down there. So after I left, I boogied on down there, and I got that book. I finished it about 1:30 in the afternoon. It was fascinating what had happened to this man. And so I really started, you know, can I do this? Is this something for me? You know, and I think it was 2 weeks later, we were gathered again on Saturday morning for prayer, and there was four of us. You weren't there that day, but I remember the guys that were there. There was four of us. And instead of gathering in the chapel, we, for some reason, they were doing something. We gathered in the vesting area, in a little room in the vesting area, and sat there with four chairs and began to pray. And in the middle of prayer, I didn't know a whole lot about this. I'd read about it. One of the guys gave an utterance in tongues. And I went, Put my head down. Okay, it's good. And then somebody gave an interpretation. And the interpretation was, don't be scared. Don't be nervous. What God has for you is the right thing. Just let it happen, or something like that. It was very, very similar to that. And it was like he was speaking exactly. It was for me. I knew he was speaking to me. That was on a Saturday morning. Sunday, there was a call given in church. Does anyone want to receive the baptism of the Holy Spirit? And I went up, and I received the baptism of the Holy Spirit. Changed a lot of things. So what did I do then? Well, Drew and I began to look at probably going into ministry. I didn't know whether to do it or not. Well, what we did was we went to Ambridge, Pennsylvania, and we visited Trinity Episcopal School for Ministry. It was the only Spirit-filled Episcopal school of ministry in those days. And I have a sister who lives in Pittsburgh, so we stayed with her, and we spent a day at Trinity. And they were so nice. They were the nicest people. A Presbyterian church, which basically folding, they gave Trinity their church. And across the street from it was an old AMP warehouse that they weren't using anymore because Ambridge was on the river. It was a steel town that basically was shut down. There was hardly anything going on in town anymore. So AMP gave them the building. So they were renovating the AMP building, and that's where they were holding classes and doing a lot of stuff. We spent the whole day with them. They were really beautiful people. We came back, and sometime later, there was a call that went out to anyone in any of the Episcopal churches if they were interested in maybe pursuing ministry. There was going to be a meeting out at Camp Weed in Live Oak on a certain Saturday. Just sign up and go. There were three people from St. David's who went. Myself, Father David, who wasn't Father David at that point, and another guy named Mike Webb. Mike is a priest in the Anglican Church. Father David, of course, is a priest here, and now I'm a priest. In 1982, I sold the store at a great loss. We didn't know what to do. And somehow or another, over the next 2 years, we survived. It was 3 months behind in the mortgage payment, all kinds of stuff happening. We had a letter arrive at the house one day, a little card with a $500 check in it from somebody. There were all kinds of little miracles that occurred to keep us going. I painted apartment buildings to just, do something and get some sort of money. But then I got an opportunity to get a teaching job at Sandalwood High School because a guy in our neighborhood was the science department chair and that I won't go. But I ended up getting a job in the science department, and I realized that's probably what I should have been doing all the way along. But, so be it. I used these 18 years in between it was good because I was able to take that practical stuff that I learned doing the various things that I do and transform it into the... I told you a few weeks ago about my battle with alcohol. It was during that time period that with much prayer and begging of God to do something about it, just like Jacob was grabbing a hold of God, I wasn't letting go. He was going to do something for me, or I knew it was going to be over for me. I knew it. Either he was going to do something or that was it. And because I'll tell you something in just a minute. He delivered me overnight. Just took it from me. And I've never had a drop since. It's just amazing. I can have the wine at communion. It does nothing in terms of, I don't know if you're aware, I think I said this the other day, but somebody who's really hooked on alcohol, all they've got to do is smell it. And you get the rush all the way through your body. That's how it goes. But God delivered me. completely, totally, I have no desire whatsoever to drink, period. It's just over. During that time when I was the senior warden, and by the way, when I became the senior warden, I think the first or second, I don't know, that's when we started to build a new building there, and we got that. Now, if I have my dates correctly, in 1993, Church of Messiah was formed, correct? I think it was 93. Well, you know, everybody had a choice, stay or go, and most people went. And we stayed at St. David's. Why? Because God told us to. And I will tell you straight up, when that split came, I was mad. I really didn't have an inkling that it was going to happen. One little hint about 6 months before, but I had forgotten all about that. I was mad. This was my church, you know. That's the only place I'd ever known as a church, period. And all of a sudden it's... And it was about a month. I didn't even go to church. True went. I didn't. I was too darn mad. But then I went back to... But I really sensed, and so did Drew, that we were supposed to stay there, even though I guess 80, 90% of the people left. We were down to 40 people, something like that. And so for the next few months, we would have a supply priest come in. And I think that was the time, it was over the summer, we had this great old guy who was a supply priest almost every Sunday. And he was an ex-alcoholic. It was neat. I was able to grab a hold of what he was saying a lot. And then probably 4 months after the split, the bishop of the Episcopal Church assigned Father Rick and Carol Wallace, who had been assistants at Church of the Redeemer on Southside Boulevard. Young couple. They had four natural children and one adopted child. The one adopted child, how many? Three natural, one adopted. I told you I'd get something wrong. And the adopted child was a black child who they took from the hospital. He was a crack baby. And they raised that child. And he was, you know, real aggressive and stuff like that. But over time, calmed down. Rick and Carol were neat, neat people. They were on the fringes of the charismatic. And they both sang, played guitar, and stuff like that. They were really neat people. But as things were going in the Episcopal Church after they were there for 3 years, Rick resigned his priesthood from the Episcopal Church because he just didn't want to stay where things were happening in the wrong way. And so we were there. He went to Vineyard on University Boulevard. Became the youth pastor first, and then he ended up to be the pastor there. Again, we were without somebody, and they assigned a retired priest, Jim Smith, who had been over at St. Peter's, which was also a charismatic church. And he was a great guy, absolutely great guy. And about this time, the Bishop of Florida called me downtown to the office. And it was actually right after Rick left. He called me down to the office and he said, "I'm putting you in charge of St. David's." I said, "Excuse me?" No, I didn't say that. I just sat there and looked at him. And he said, "If you will accept it, I'm going to put you in charge of St. David's. You will get a supply priest every Sunday, but you're to do everything that you're supposed to do there at the church, including all the reports and so forth and so on." He said, "I've got a guy who's going to do the finances. He will do the money part of it. He'll take care of that, so you don't have to worry about that, but you're in charge." Came home and told Drew, and I said, "What do you think?" She said, "If he told you to do it, let's do it." So we were in charge of St. David's for about 6 months. And then the bishop called me down again, and he said, We have a startup Episcopal church on Beach Boulevard. They're operating out of a storefront. They have nothing except about 20 people. You have about 30 people, but you've got the property and the buildings. What do you think about bringing the two together? And I had some real questions about that. I said, who's going to be, you know. And they had a priest, a young guy, there. So we started negotiating and talking it out and so forth, and we ended up doing that. And the only, you know, I've told other people, I told them at the time I didn't like the idea. What I didn't like was they were going to change the name of the church. I said, you don't need to do that. This was commissioned as St. David's Episcopal Church. You can keep the name. Now, they felt that it was something that would, you know, bad memories and all that sort of stuff. So they changed it to Resurrection Episcopal Church. Okay. So the young guy who came was a really cool guy. I loved him and his wife. But a couple of months after that, on a Saturday morning, Drew and I were laying in bed, and I said, honey, I got something to tell you. And she says, what's that? I said, I have a feeling that we need to leave St. David's, or Redeemer, Resurrection. And she looked at me and said, I've been getting the same feeling. So to us, that was confirmation. So I went to the priest, and I told him what we had done, what we felt. And he was the most gracious guy. He said to me, you know what? We had worked a lot together. And he says, I am not going to consider you having left at all. I am going to consider you being called out. And so we left. We had made an agreement with the bishop that we would I would stay there for 6 months. And he said, after 6 months, if you want to do something, you're free to do it. And I think we stayed 8 months or something like that. But at that point, we left under good. I wrote a beautiful. I still have a copy of it. I wrote him a letter, and so forth. And so we left there, and then we spent about 6 months wondering what to do next. And we visited around, and we basically visited two churches. And it was decision. And Drew said to me one day, we got to make up our mind. What do you want to do? And I said, I really feel in my heart we need to go to Church of the Messiah. She said, okay, that's where we're going. So we came back to the people that we had been with for a long time, because that's where a lot of them were. Now, one little part here, I'm going to end it up. As Father Scott said, I haven't been ordained all that long. I'm 74 years old. I don't know if you remember at the ordination, Bishop Simpson stood there. The first thing he said in his message, I guess a lot of you are wondering why we're ordaining Lon at his age. That's what he said. I went, thanks, Bishop. No, that's what he said. And he said, we're doing this because he's been doing the ministry of a priest for a long time. And I was involved. Please, I'm not pointing to me, but that was the reason I got ordained. Now, why didn't I pursue it earlier when the opportunities were there? It took me a long time to figure that out. It just kind of dropped. But at the same time, in that same time frame, in 1995, one Saturday morning, we got a phone call. And it was the Salvation Army downtown. And a lady on the other end of the line said, do you know that your daughter is here with her two sons? And I said, what are you talking about? She said, she filled out the paperwork. I have this Mary Pardee is here with her two sons, Justin and Hunter. And I said, why? She said, well, they just showed up. And I said, are you putting them up? She said, yes. And I said, can I come and get them? And she said, yes, of course you can. She had put us down on the form as the parents. I said, I'll be right there. And I went to Drew, and I didn't even give her any choice. I said, get in the car. We're going to get Mary and the boys. Now, why am I telling you that? God needed me and Drew to do something else for a period of our time. And I realized this about a few years ago. That he put us on hold because he needed us to do something else. And that's help raise those boys. She was pregnant with Austin at the time. And that's what we did for about the next 15 years. And then things picked up again. And Father David called me into the office one day and said, what do you think about ordination? And the process started. But you know, if you listen, or even if you don't listen sometimes to God, but you just have these intuitions as to what to do and what not to do, He'll bless it. He'll bless it. And He has the plan for every single one of us. Every single one of us. Sometimes we know it. Sometimes we don't. But that's okay. Because if we just keep putting one foot in front of the other, He'll bless it. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.